Thank you, sir. Okay, David, let's have the roll call, please, sir.
Dr. Dennison?
Here.
Ms. Haskins? Mr. Higdon?
Here.
Mr. Jesse?
Here.
Mr. Johnson?
Here.
Mr. Kennedy?
Here.
Mr. Meyer?
Here.
Dr. Mentor?
Here.
Mr. Wilkie? Mr. Zilke?
Thank you, sir. This time I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the special meeting of June 25th, 2010.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Also, entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the third quarter meeting of July 30th, 2010.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I guess that was really not July 30th, but...
Mr. Chair, before let me take a liberty just as we get started here, I didn't plan on doing this, but Mike, your invocation made me think about it, and normally I don't do this because we deal with matters like this 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times a year, given the complexity of this university and our university family. But a few weeks ago, at the Guthrie Tower. Right out here, we had a memorial service for a young man named Eric Yates, who was commissioned an ROTC cadet in December of 2008. Many of you were at that ceremony, whether you remember that individual or not. I do. And he was killed in Afghanistan several weeks ago, and that's the first ROTC commissioned cadet in the modern era that we've lost in service to this country. And it was quite a emotional ceremony for him and his family. He's from Hardin County, it's a fine line between grief and pride, and both were plentiful that day. With his family and all of our ROTC cadets assembled, and it just puts a whole new meaning on their oath of office and what they're stepping into. And I just wanted to share that with the board. We lose students and we lose faculty and staff, but that one was particularly poignant, and it was, like I said, it was a moment filled with grief, but also pride in what our ROTC program does and positions those young men and women to do in defense of this nation. So I just wanted to share that with you. One of those special moments, special in a very sad way, but that's what that Guthrie Tower does on this campus. It's about duty, honor, country, and a very special place for just such moments.
Thank you, sir. Before we go forward with the stated agenda, I've got something I'd like to share with y'all just for a few minutes here. And let me recite what I've got. Gary Ransel is a leader in post-secondary education, not just in Bowling Green, but in Kentucky and the nation. In a time when the average tenure of university presidents is about 7 years, his strong commitment to WKU, to the students, faculty, and staff, and his vision have led us through a transformation from a university of regional importance to one of national and international consequence. He is innovative, finding ways to get things done in both good and bad economic times. He has been creative in putting together partnerships that have been key to institutional success. He has been a leader on key policy issues within the Commonwealth and has been a player in national incentives as well. With his leadership, enrollment at WKU has grown from around 14,800 in 1968 to nearly 21,000 this year, a 39% growth in total enrollment, more than any other university in Kentucky. Growth has been across the board on the main campus here in Bowling Green and at each regional campus in Glasgow, Elizabethtown, Owensboro, as well as online. President Ransel's commitment to WKU is heartfelt. It is personal, and it is rare. WKU is his alma mater, He is a Kentuckian. He and Julie met and married here. His sons graduated from here. WKU is family for Gary and Julie Rasmell. The personal relationship between a university president and his alma mater is not common in higher education today. As we look around this campus, we see on buildings names of people who have been important in the growth and development of WKU. I feel it's appropriate at this time that we recognize the impact Gary Rasmell has made, particularly in transforming WKU from a regional university to a university with national and international significance. His strategic approach to everything from academic quality to construction to fundraising has had the same kind of tremendous impact on the transformation of this university to this university as others whose names are on the buildings. It is fitting tribute to his, in my view, it is a fitting tribute to his visionary leadership for the past 13 years, or the first 13 years of his presidency, and to what we expect of him for the next 12 years, that we should name the new College of Education the Gary A. Rasmell College of Education building. I would like to present that to y'all and maybe and entertain a motion to that.
So moved.
Mr. Chairman, in conjunction with Mr. Johnson, it would be our honor and privilege to proffer a motion to that effect.
Thank you, sir. I have a motion and a second, and all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No opposed? Mr. President?
Thank you.
You deserve it.
Thank you very much.
You deserve it. And we're delighted. I love that College of Education. I love our president. And I love what he's done for this university. I'll now leave it up to the other folks to get the signage and all that stuff, how it's all going to be. But
thank you. That is indeed an honor, and I'm not quite sure what to say about that. But I'm humbled and grateful, and to have that opportunity alongside other presidents that have served this institution. Is certainly a pinnacle of my career, and I can't wait for the next dozen years to. We're just getting started, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now that we
now I would suggest that Sam, is Sam here? College of Education, and Behavioral Sciences is in there, so if I might ask a little bit of latitude with how the college factors in to that signage, we'll come back to you with the best way to approach that. So
you all handle the particulars.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate, Board, you all going along with me on that, and I spoke with most of you, and thank you so much for that. Now let's go on with the meeting. Now, academic affairs. Melissa is standing in for Yvette Haskins today. I'll turn it over to you.
I'm going to refer to Dr. Emsley, who's going to go over action items 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, and 1.4, and that starts on page 1 of our booklet.
Okay, thank you. Action item 1.1 is requesting approval to move the Associate of Science and Water Resource Management degree from the University College to the Ogden College of Science and Engineering, and Associate Dean Dr. Andy Orange is here to do that. That's not matter.
The degree program was established on account of the Center for Water Resource Studies being located in the Ogden College of Science and Engineering for the last 20-odd years. We've got a state national reputation for technical assistance, capacity development, water resource management, and the establishment of the degree program was an outgrowth of that. Locating it at the community college at the time was a strategic decision. At this point, we're moving forward with a initiative to create a national center through a combination of NSF funding and other sources. And at this point, it's strategic sense to work on technical financial perspective to look at the three programs at the same college that the technical capacity.
I want to add to that that the faculty in both colleges, both the University College and the Alton College, have indicated their support for such a move.
Dennis, anything to add?
No, sir. I think Andy said it well.
Okay. Action item 1.2 is requesting approval to offer a graduate certificate in career counseling and Dean Sam Evans.
Thank you. Dr. Ansley, what a privilege. We are pleased to be located in the Gary A. Ransdell Hall. Congratulations.
I'm honored that the College of Education would that I could be associated with that building and the college where our core roots as a state normal school exist.
This particular certificate program is designed to enhance the knowledge and skills of those who are in the field of counseling, specifically related to career counseling. The more we look at the whole concept of college and career readiness, the importance of counseling in that process becomes more important each and every day. So we're pleased to offer this proposal to the board.
I'd like to combine action items 1.3 and 1.4, requesting approval for both a Master of Arts in Religious Studies and a graduate certificate in the same area, Dean David Lee from the Potter College of Arts and Letters.
These two programs are designed to take advantage of the fact that I think WKU got to the future first. In the last decade, we've had some sometimes hard lessons about the importance of religion in the human experience, but this university has had a serious program for the study of religion for decades. But what we'd like to do now is expand that to a bit of a different level to be able to present a master's program in religious studies. We intend for it to be a program with a comparative religions focus, so it does incorporate the university's concern for internationalization and international reach. It also reflects the growing religious diversity of this community as well. So it'll be a fairly unique program. There are not very many MAs in religion out there. And the certificate program is designed, I guess, for two things. Partly to give folks a kind of taste of what the serious study of religion is like. And it's also designed to kind of give folks a sample. They decide they like it, they'll sign up for the rest of the degree. So there's a sales dimension to this as well as our effort to give folks a kind of taste of what religious studies is about. But those are the ingredients that go into this. We have a very strong mix of senior and junior faculty to deliver it, and I think it's going to be a wonderful thing for us.
David, what would be the one who would pursue the certificate? What type of credential? What would one do with a certificate in religious studies?
I'm going to refer to Eric Bain Selbo, but folks who are probably school teachers might do that as an added dimension for what they're able to do in the classroom. I think that's an obvious piece for Eric. May want to add some others to that.
Yeah, I mean one of the ideas we had initially, and we haven't pursued this as far as we would like to at this point, is that the certificate could be something that somebody in social science teacher, for example, could benefit from, whether it's part of their professional development or not. It could still be an important part of adding a dimension to their teaching that they otherwise don't have. The other thing that we're looking at, and we have the capital improvement proposal in, is we're looking to convert one of our classrooms into a web conferencing classroom, which would allow us to provide the certificate, at least. We could provide all those courses through web conferencing, so that if there's somebody in Indiana who would like to have this sort of educational experience, we would be able to have them participate in the seminar classes that we're running in that.
Or India.
So there's a lot of options in that regard.
Thank you.
And Regent Dennis, I'd request that the board consider items 1.1 through 1.4 at this time.
At this time, I'll ask for a motion to accept those.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any question? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? So those are approved. And then I'll turn your attention to action item 1.5, which is on page 20. That's the approval of emeritus faculty appointments. Read those. Do I have a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Second.
Question? Can I ask for everybody in favor to say aye?
Aye. Aye.
Anybody who disapproves? So then it's you again.
And me again.
For your information.
Information items. I'm here representing Interim Associate VP of Enrollment Management, Dale Brown, who unfortunately couldn't be here. In your packet, you have a interim status report on this fall's enrollment. It's a spreadsheet looking something like this. And the final census date for recording enrollment will be next Thursday, where we record our final enrollment numbers to the CPE. I thought it was important for you to have an idea of where we are now. As you can see, we're up 85 students compared to this time last year. We expect that number to double between now and the census date. Significantly, I think the freshman number is a little down. The sophomore number is up significantly by 154 students, which I think speaks to our efforts for freshman retention on the campus and ultimately degree completion. We do believe that the economy has played a role in driving these numbers somewhat, particularly the freshman enrollment number, and also the fact that unfortunately about 1,100 students earlier in the semester were dropped for non-payment of required tuition and fees. I'm pleased to report that up to 60% of those have been reinstated, but this is an issue we will be looking at very closely to make sure that, you know, students enroll or not, you know, drop from enrollment, you know, for that reason in the future. I guess that's about it. You know, graduate enrollment is fairly steady. We expect that to increase in the future as our master's and doctoral programs grow. And again, the final numbers will be available next week.
Before you leave this particular matter, Gordon, a couple points that I want to elaborate a bit more on that Gordon alluded to. We're right now, actually it's been about 10 days, I guess, since we had the drop for non-payment date, and that's a practice we've had each fall. And we had a higher number this year than we have had in the past, but the reinstatement rate is about the same percentage that we've experienced in the past. Maybe a couple hundred more this year than we have had at the previous year's experience with drop for non-payment. Now, that also includes students that did not ever show up on day one that were registered for classes. It includes those who had no means or capacity or intent to pay. And with a student enrollment population of nearly 21,000, you're going to have some who come here for a month or two and never really intended to complete anything, but it was, you know, seemed like a good thing to do for a while. And so they enjoyed the Preston Center and did other things, and sooner or later you got to pay your bills. But as Gordon suggested, we're studying all the data, and one of the things I really like about Gordon's work and what Dale Brown is doing as Interim Associate Vice President for Enrollment Management is really putting data to work to analyze trends and cause and effect, and we're really studying a lot of data these days that frankly I've not seen before. And it's enlightening, insightful, helpful. And we're going to put that data to work, and we're going to come back to you as this year unfolds with practice and policy that really gets at the core of persistence and retention. Because just let me put it in a financial number, with the drop for non-payment, that's several million dollars. If for no other reason, other than it's the right thing to do to help students that you admit do everything we possibly can to help them persist and succeed. From a financial standpoint alone, there's a significant financial consequence to students' failure to persist in the freshman year, the first year. And so we're going to look at not just the period for drop for non-payment, but throughout the first and second semester and really turn up the heat on what do we need to be doing to help students learn how to learn and succeed in the classroom. And it's you're just going to be hearing more about that. To take that a bit further, in a given state, across our national economy, think about the, and maybe it's in the billions, I don't know, but certainly millions and millions of dollars that are in effect wasted from students that receive Pell Grants, that receive state funding, that receive KEYS funding in this state, that is just money that may not be wasted, because maybe 6 weeks or 8 weeks on a university campus has some value. But I don't think that's the intent of a Pell Grant or a KEYS award or other scholarship and financial aid opportunities that are available to a lot of students that fail to persist. So this is something you're going to be hearing more about. It's front and center on my mind for lots of reasons, intellectual and financial. I just wanted to elaborate a bit more because I'm really pleased with the work that's being done to get at this very important matter going forward. And that's why you see 154 more sophomores than you saw last year. That's all about retention. That's all about persistence. So we've offset actually a drop in freshmen. So retention is important for financial stability, if nothing else. So you're going to hear more about this this winter and next spring and going into the summer and fall meetings next year. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Gary.
Also in your handout, there's a sheet that looks like this. I'm going to summarize. This is from Dr. Craig Cobain, who unfortunately can't be here also. It's a, so as Gary says, we don't like to talk about freshmen here. We talk about the class of 2014. This is a class of 2014 student profile in the Honors College. You can see that all of the academic colleges are represented with particular emphasis in Ogden Science and Engineering and Arts and Letters.
Gordon, do we have that handout?
Should be in the back.
Oh, yes, in the back. Okay, excuse me. Yep. There we go.
Average ACT score of 29. You can see the top 10 producing public high schools that serve the Honors College, and they're located across the state. And on the right-hand side, other states represented, and there are a total of 9 other states represented in our Honors College profile. So this is one of our, I call it turrets at WKU, one of our things with flags flying at the top that we're very proud of, and we look forward to more and more great things coming from the Honors College. Another one of the things that we're very proud of is our international component. As a leading American university with international reach, I'd like to invite Dr. Rick Sutton, who will discuss an initiative that he's recently undertaken to form international councils to represent the great diversity of international programs here at WKU. Rick.
Learning the technology, so we didn't get a chance to rehearse this. Thank you, Gordon. When I first interviewed for the position of Chief International Officer here last spring, I was really struck by the fact that the university had an awful lot of strong and active international programs. And I was looking for an institution that had the intellectual horsepower and the infrastructure to become a truly global university. WKU clearly had those pieces in place to make that happen. But it was also apparent that many of these pieces were operating in their own independent orbits, largely scattered across campus and disconnected from each other. And I knew that we would need to find a way to help bring them in touch with each other and to find harmonies in their many diverse programs. As Dr. Nemsley and I considered how best to approach this challenge, we realized that there were three primary chords that were part of this broad array of international voices. We did not want to change their location or their position in the hierarchy, but we did want to bring them into a more concerted construct that would help go beyond their individual voices. And what emerged was a constellation. If this works. Nope. Shut it off. There we are. What emerged was a constellation of three councils that were each prepared to capture the dynamic interaction of their members and yet collectively blend into a larger whole. And if you'll bear with me for a moment on the choir metaphor for this. The first and foremost pieces are the colleges. And they are, if you will, the basses and the baritones of the choir. They are the deep voices that provide the foundation of a global university. The International Education Council consists of faculty leaders appointed by the deans, and they are charged to develop strategies in each college to ensure that every WKU student has pathways to include global dimensions in their university experience. The council guides major international initiatives, recommends policies, and anchors WKU's international ambitions. But there, oops, I did it again. But there are a host of other voices in the curriculum. The degree programs, majors, minors, and certificates that provide structures, opportunities. They're supposed to be popping up there, they go. Structured opportunities for our students to achieve an international framework for their education. And these are the altos and the tenors of the choir, adding richness and color to the music of international studies. These we have gathered into the Coordinating Council on the Global Curriculum, which brings together some of our best and brightest faculty in the international arena to consider how this wealth of intellectual capital infuses our research and teaching. If you look at that array, it's a pretty impressive group of programs. Finally, there are the voices that carry the melody, the particular notes that connect our students to the reality of global education. These are the sopranos, the highly visible and tangible operations that bring international programs into clear focus. They come from the immediacy of sitting next to a student from China sitting next to a student from China in your Asian history class, the empowerment of making your way as a student in a foreign environment, and the enrichment of learning about the diversity of the world's 6 billion people through events right on your very own campus. This is an impressive display of talent and resources embedded throughout the university, and the Coordinating Council on International Programs provides a place for them to come together to share ideas, confront common problems, and ensure that the mechanics of our global enterprise are operating at the highest levels of efficiency and effectiveness. Together, these three councils create a much more integrated and coordinated approach to international education. They provide new opportunities to identify synergies, share best practices, and improve efficiencies. They preserve the creativity and innovation that comes from decentralized organization, but they are now positioned to work in concert with each other to strengthen WKU's international reach. So thanks for your attention. Happy to answer any questions.
Very, very impressive, Rick. Thank you. As board members, I mean, you've come to learn what a complex thing a university can be, and when you seek as a core priority, a goal, a vision, a mission to internationalize an entire university experience, that's a complex undertaking, and you'll not be successful if you operate in a vacuum and you don't engage this complex university community in that process. from academic life to student life, and these coordinating councils do provide that coordination and communication that's fundamentally critical if we're to fully internationalize this experience. So these are exactly the kind of steps we need to be taking, and so I'm glad to see that we're on our way.
Carrie and I had the privilege of introducing ourselves to each of these councils earlier this week and last week, and you see a fair number of people involved, and I've never seen such a group of bright-eyed people at each one. Really seemed eager to get to work on this, to make sure that all these influences come together as a confluence to move the mission forward. It was very good. And thanks to Rick for putting these together. It's been great. As Gary indicated, when discussing the enrollment numbers, university is about not only access to a college education, but also ensuring success in that endeavor. And I'd like to introduce Dr. Dennis George, who's Dean of our University College, who's going to describe access to success in the particular context of the University College here at WKU, which I think you'll find is a rather unique institution.
Thank you very much, Gordon.
This is your presentation.
There we go.
How's it going there?
I'm a little nervous there. Well, thank you very much, and I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about University College today. I know you all heard about University College and wonder what it is and what are we doing with the University College and what sorts of things does it contribute to the campus community. And so I'm delighted to have this opportunity to spend just a few minutes, and in the spirit of the day, I do promise to be very brief, but to give you at least sort of a 30,000-feet overview of University College. And actually, this notion of access to success is a phrase that Gordon used as we made the tours of our regional campuses. He kept talking about how the regional campuses provide access to success for folks out in the region, and it occurred to me that really is an explanation or a tagline for what all of University College does, and that's kind of how I wanted to structure this today. It's to talk about how University College provides access to success for a variety of populations who, frankly, would not have the opportunity to be part of the WKU family otherwise. And we do this primarily through the three major components of University College: our regional campuses, our Commonwealth School, and our interdisciplinary programming. So I want to talk a little bit about each of those three today, and I want to start with the regional campuses. As you all know, we do have regional campuses in this town, Redcliffe, Owensboro, and Glasgow. And each of those campuses has their own unique opportunities and challenges, but collectively what they do is provide opportunity for folks in our regions to attend WKU who would not come here otherwise. A lot of those students are KCPCS graduates, particularly in Owensboro and Elizabethtown. These are students who go through either Elizabethtown Community and Technical College or Owensboro Community and Technical College or Madisonville or Henderson. They get that associate's degree, and if it weren't for us, many of them would literally stop. They would not go on to pursue a four-year degree. In fact, in Davis County, where OCPC is located, we have the highest population of students with associate's degrees and the lowest population of students with baccalaureate degrees. Now we have the opportunity for those students to go right across the street and get that baccalaureate degree at WKU Owensboro. So we're providing this opportunity. Also, out in our regions, we have a lot of individuals who are non-traditional students. These are folks who are older, who have a spouse, who have children, who have 40-hour week jobs, and as much as they might like to, commuting to Bowling Green to participate, or moving to Bowling Green to participate in the full-fledged college experience, just is not possible. And so we provide this opportunity for them to get that four-year degree. You all may recognize some of these buildings. This is our facilities in Elizabethtown, and which we share there, the Post-Secondary Education Center. This is our wing here in the Regional Post-Secondary Education Center. There's our new facility in Radcliffe, and I'm sure most of you on the board have seen that, but if you have not, those of you in the gallery, if you haven't seen that facility, it is beautiful on the inside. I was just trying to be subtle with that, but obviously I was not. But there's Briscoe Hall in Fort Knox. And I want to introduce Dr. Ron Stevens. Ron, if you'd... Dr. Stevens, many of you know, is the director of our operations in Elizabethtown, Ragged Fort Knox. But just to give you a little bit of the flavor of who those students are at that campus, we have almost 1,300 face-to-face students. This is based on fall 2009. Of course, as Gordon said, the numbers for this year have not been frozen yet. 2,600 or so total enrollments, and note that's increased almost 50% in the last 4 years. Call your attention to this number down here. This is 49% non-traditional. So virtually half of the students at this campus are non-traditional students. These are students who, again, a traditional college experience is not possible for them, but yet they can get it here. We also have a lot of soldiers, obviously, because we have a campus at Fort Knox and Radcliffe. We also have, because of the base realignment and closure and all these people who are moving to Hardin County, there's a lot of interest on the part of other post-secondary institutions. And in fact, at last count, Ron, what do we have, about 17 institutions of higher learning operating now in Hardin County. Some of them out of motels and hotels and whatever else they can find. But it's a lot of competition for us up there.
Dennis, elaborate on the difference between a face-to-face student and a total enrollment.
Well, a lot of these, a face-to-face student might take more than one class. And so the total enrollments are the number of total class enrollment, course enrollments. Another thing I might mention, too, relative to the regional campuses, and I don't want to forget this, a lot of students out in the regions are taking online courses. But they come to our regional campuses to use the computer labs, to get advising, financial aid advice, those kinds of things. So even though they may not be a face-to-face student, quote-unquote, at a regional campus, they do utilize the services there. There's a facility in Owensboro, and I introduced Dr. Gene Tice, who needs no introduction here, but Dr. Tice is the director of our Owensboro campus. Beautiful new facility that was constructed, actually, by the Davis County District Court. See almost 1,100 face-to-face students there, 42% increase in the last 4 years in total enrollments, and again, a large population, a large percentage of this population being non-traditional students. Just put this slide in here to point out, this is not working really close. This is phase one. This is what the building that you just saw that is already built. There's a phase two plan that is actually a collaboration between WKU and KCTCS. We hope will be built soon. But then to show that there are plans for a nice-sized campus there in Owensboro. And this is the kind of thing I think that is important for us, because when we go to Owensboro, we go to Davis County, we see folks who really want a public four-year institution there. And what we say is, you have a public four-year institution there with the OCTC-WKU partnership. And we say the same thing in Elizabethtown. That there is a public four-year institution in Elizabethtown and Owensboro with that partnership. And just to show you, we have this campus plan.
Don't leave this slide yet. A point below what you're showing there, OCTC, Owensboro Community Technical College, is right across the street. You'd be down, wouldn't it?
Right about here?
There, yeah. Down. There you go. You're almost on the street. Keep going. There you go. OCTC is right across the street from this WKUO campus, but a lot of campuses have streets going through them. And Gene is doing a marvelous job of coordinating with the OCTC's new president, Jim Clauber, to create that partnership. And our intent is not to have the OCTC campus here and our campus there. It's giving us opportunity to grow and expand to create the true baccalaureate destination point for those that access this campus, but continue to work closely with OCTC as Ron does with ECTC in Elizabethtown. The 29 acres that you see in light green here is owned by Davis County Fiscal Court. We don't own that land. but they have turned it over to us to use to create our campus there. Davis County Physical Corp built the Phase 1 building, as Dennis said. We lease it at a very modest rate from Davis County Physical Corp. The Phase 2 building was the project that, going back 4 years ago, I guess, was one of the projects vetoed by Governor Fletcher, among others, in that period of time, and we've never been able to get that back funded again, but it continues to be high on our priority list and OCTC, KCTCS's priority list for projects to finally get funded that were authorized, approved, and actually in the budget. So unfortunately, we've not been able to get that building back yet, but we will keep trying until we do. But that'll be funded by the state. And, you know, at this point, the future building, the three additional sites are just a long-term plan at this point, and we'll take it one phase, one step at a time. But this would not be possible without a great partnership with Owensboro, Davis County Physical Corp, the City of Owensboro, and some great vision by the magistrates in Davis County to make this possible. And that's rare, because I don't know of another circumstance in Kentucky where a county government has in effect created the circumstance for public university to exist and grow, and actually step forward with some $6 million in funding to do that. So it's quite an unusual partnership. All three of our regional campuses are so different. So anyway, I just wanted to give you that background on this WKUO layout.
And I might also mention that we have joint enrollment agreements signed with OCTC, Madisonville, and Henderson, and we're pursuing one with ECTC, which basically means their students are OCTC students, but they're also WKU students. And they get a WKU ID card, and they can use our facilities. They come to our football games or basketball games or whatever. But for us, the win is that we now have access to those students. Even as freshmen, we can go in and begin advising those students to—they're our students—and and that really has been very, very helpful in terms of making that transition.
Dennis,
yes, sir.
Is the school in Madisonville, is that not a part of the University of Kentucky?
Well, what we are finding is that a lot of the institutions are sort of retrenching. I think that the budget issues have caused folks to pull back a lot from their regional campuses, and we've moved into those vacuums. And Gene, you might.
That's good.
Oh, well, now Madisonville is part of KCTCS. You mean Murray?
Well.
But it used to be part of UK.
Yes. Prior to higher ed reform in 1997, the major plank of Paul Patton's higher ed reform was separating all of the technical and community colleges, across which there were some 64, I guess, total technical community colleges and combinations thereof, and that completely separated, and now that created the Kentucky Community and Technical College system. So that separation occurred then, and it's pretty well run its course over the last dozen years or so.
But when they finish their associate degree, they can go to
anywhere they want to. Yeah.
So we are recruiting those students to come to.
It's like we're recruiting a little harder than some of our sister schools, in it, which is great.
There's our facility in Glasgow. Now, without going into a lot of detail, that is a regional post-secondary education center in which we are the lead institution, as opposed to Elizabethtown, where ECTC is the lead institution. And I want to introduce Dr. James McCaslin, who's the director there. The campus in Glasgow operates a lot more like a traditional campus, because whereas at Elizabethtown and Owensboro, we do not offer lower division courses, because we are there with our partners at OCTC and ECTC. Here we do offer all 4 years. And so you can see that is reflected. We have a lot more students there because we do offer all 4 years, but you know, we're looking at a 5,000 student campus there. The increase is not quite as dramatic, but has certainly been growing. And you can also see that still a significant percentage of non-traditional, but not as much because, again, we are more of a traditional campus there in Glasgow.
Again, before you leave that one, now our WKUG is larger than, I guess, most, if not all, of the private colleges in Kentucky. I can't think of any that's as large as that. It's larger than probably a third of the public colleges in America. Serves how many campuses? How many counties, James?
55 counties in Kentucky, 7 in Tennessee, and 5 in Indiana.
So we've come a long way in about 10 years' time, 11 years' time since that building opened. We're packed in that building. I mean, I'm just amazed that we can have that much productivity out of that one building. And the main reason I point that out to you is we need additional space at Glasgow. Well, we're probably going to need it in the rest of our campuses, but especially in Glasgow. We found a way to create additional opportunity in Radcliffe with that campus by leasing space in a strip mall that was an old Houchins grocery store that we turned into a campus there or a place that looks better on the inside than the outside. But Glasgow, we don't have a solution. We have an idea, but it will probably require a lease. And if I just want to give you a heads up that we may have to take on the cost of leasing space in Glasgow in order to allow this campus to continue to grow and serve the students that it's capable of serving. Don't know what that solution is quite yet, but we're working at it, and we know we've got to do that. But the likelihood of getting a state-funded building on that campus is remote for quite some time. Frankly, the Owensboro building is at the top of the list of all the state projects, and it's going to happen first whenever that occurs. Who knows how we're going to continue to unfold in Fort Knox, but Fort Knox can provide facilities and space to help us with that somewhat. Glasgow's a different matter, and we're it at Glasgow. There is a Bowling Green Tech component on our Glasgow campus. Maybe you're going to get around to that, but primarily it's WKUG, and we're going to have an expense variable in Glasgow sooner or later, and hopefully sooner than later, to allow that campus to go. I just wanted to give you a heads up on that. It's essential that we put that campus in a position to grow, and so just planting that seed with you.
Okay, so in terms of access to success, the University College, the first component would be our regional campuses. Second component would be the Commonwealth School, formerly the Bowling Green Community College. And I'd like to introduce Mr. Tim Brotherton, who is the director of the Commonwealth School. Through the Commonwealth School, we actually provide access to success for at least a couple different populations. One is a group of students who choose to take one of our associate degrees there because they like that environment. They tend to be more of the non-traditional students. They like sort of the non-threatening, supportive environment out there. So there are a lot of people who are fully admissible to this institution who choose to take an associate degree at South Campus. We also help a group of people there have access to success who come to us not quite ready to pursue a college education. They are, in accordance with Senate Bill 1, not college ready based on their ACT scores. And so they need some additional assistance on the front end so that they can be successful. And through the Commonwealth School, we provide that additional assistance in terms of developmental education. And I know this is a wordy slide, but just a little bit of data to point out to you a couple things. We do have students who come to WKU with developmental needs. And just to show you, if we use the placement criteria that we have in place now, if we apply that same placement criteria and you come to class last year, turns out that actually less than 40% of them would have been college ready. In fact, 20%, one in five of every student incoming last fall needed three developmental courses, English, reading, mathematics. And if you look at our population last year, all our undergraduate population, if we had not admitted students who had a developmental need, our population, our undergraduate population, would have dropped by about half. So we have people that come to us with some developmental needs. But the good news is that we can handle that. We can help those folks get what they need to move forward to be successful. And I put this little piece of data in here to show that if you look at the graduates, those who attained a baccalaureate degree in 2009-10, 40% of them came here needing at least one developmental supplemental course. But hey, they got it, and they graduated. So if you look out on that vast sea of folks getting that degree, 40% of them came here needing a little help on the front end. But we know how to do that, and we do that. We provide that developmental education. We also, and I certainly want to be clear, there are a number of support systems. This is not just the developmental education. There's the AARC, the Academic Advisory Retention Center provides support. There's support through the colleges. So we have the support systems to get those people what they need and keep them on track and help them to be successful. The third component of University College is that the interdisciplinary programming that we have that really is sort of the beginning point for University College. We do have various academic departments and programs. We do offer degrees and certificates both at the baccalaureate and graduate level. We have a variety of centers and institutes. These are interdisciplinary programs that don't fit neatly into a specific department or college, and University College provides the home for those. And one of the things that we're looking to do is to sort of pull this together into a school of integrated studies, and we'll be coming back to the board with that once we sort of get those things finalized and asking for your approval. So, last slide. University College, we provide access to success through our regional campuses where we provide opportunities for students who just don't have the opportunity to come otherwise. We're a Commonwealth school where we provide opportunities for people who want to start in a smaller, non-threatening environment or need a little developmental help on the front end, and through our interdisciplinary program. So, thank you very much. Appreciate this opportunity. Any questions?
Good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Dave.
And that concludes the Academic Affairs Committee business, I believe. Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
That takes us to the Executive Committee, and I'm going to call on Mr. John Osborne to give us a construction progress report for update.